So, at this point, I wanted to know exactly what the mapping was. The precision. And I went to the Guyotat's work, the book Forbidden Literature, where he talks about what he's actually doing and why he writes the way he does. And that's the what I really wanted to go over with you. It's dense, so you can really have to bear with it now. The easiest way to begin is with when he talks about what his main concerns are in writing. He says, I write like a scientist. I'm not interested in lyricism or sentimentality. I'm not interested in representation. That was really important for me because most of my work, I think most of you probably don't know any of my work, which is, but it sounds like pompous, my work. I really have no, like, it's not my work. I just have no right now or, you know, have no interest in self-expression. I couldn't care less. What really interests me when I'm writing is quite something else. I mean, I'm actually fond of taking a book and copying it. I've always been fond of math. I'm fond of doing almost anything besides expressing something. I mean, I can't write a letter. I can't write an essay. You know, I can't even fill out forms for NEA. You know, when they say, what do you do? And I have to think, what do I do? You know, I find it so fucking boring. You know, I just, to hear my own voice all the time, I'm a narcissist enough that if someone asks me about myself, sure, I love to blab, but it's gossip. And anything, you know, all right, I love to blab, but if I have to listen to it, I just get bored out of my damn mind. And I love to write. You know, I actually love this, the feeling my hand move, my muscles move up and down the paper with a pen in it. You know, I make myself write a certain amount of day. It's not even making. It's hard. I have to make myself stop. And anything that isn't self-expression is what I love. And everything just seems to be a way of doing something else. You know, I once loaded like this history of literature that should be all the ways in which people have done every, you know, have tried to get around self-expression. So this was absolutely central.
Would you say the apocalypse is self-expression?
The apocalypse is self-expression. By the apocalypse, you mean the end of the world?
Well, the apocalyptic vision or the apocalypse of St. John.
Yeah. Well, what the apocalypse means for me is that I think of the world as being destroyed and created every second. So I don't really have that idea of an apocalypse, though I understand according to a lot of mythical theories, we are in the age of Kali or whatever, the last age, and there's going to be a big change coming around. Total destruction and total creation, well, of course, that's just every second. Apocalypse according to St. John, I know what it is.
What I'm just trying to isolate is that if that's not self-expression, I mean, then it's like the seeing the apocalypse or the apocalyptic vision of the world as not particularly personal. I mean, you've got no personal.
Oh, well, I would imagine that what they meant by the apocalypse is they meant that was reality. I think I'm a real limited person, you know, like if I ever express myself, I'm going to just, you know, for me to get beyond my limits, I'm just talking about I noticed when I was in Haiti, I saw one, you know, like wherever I am, all right, I'll give you an example. My grandmother just died, and it's the end of my family. And for the last 10 years, I've been extremely poor. At one point, right after my grandmother died, though it's not true, I thought I was going to come into an immense amount of money. It totally freaked me. And I suddenly started seeing totally differently. I first realized that I have this heavy, heavy viewpoint as being a poor person, and a lot of my so-called revolutionary or whatever political perspectives are from this, because I've been living as a very poor person. And suddenly I started seeing myself as seeing things in, as a rich person, right?
Right.
Same me. I mean, you know, same body, same eyes. And I realized that I just, whatever environment it is, how I see, you know? Like, maybe I'm not very strong or something, but that's, you know, I saw this. I saw all these, like, fantasies real clearly. I want to get beyond that. I mean, there must be some way I'm not going to be, you know, endlessly just mirror, you know, sending out as mirrors those walls, those mental walls. So what I mean by non-self-expression is I don't want writing to be always this sending out of these mental walls.
Yeah.
Is that clear? What that has to do with apocalypse, I'm not sure. But
well, I was just kind of, I was thinking of that piece that you read immediately before you started
right.
the discussion again, and how there seemed to be a, the world is being, as dissembling, you know, before.
The world is dissembling, yeah, I think we're, you know, I guess I feel that, yeah. How we live, yeah.
John, excuse me, one thing Kathy asked is...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that's,
well, just that she wanted to present this.
Okay.
And then,
remember, this isn't my writing. This is someone else's. I'm not self-expressing here. This is translation that I'm reading, which is another way I get around the problem of self-expression. Is that okay? All right. Insecurity. All right, he starts saying, write like a scientist. I'm not interested in representation. I hate self-expression. First of all, I want to replace the intention and act of representation with using words as strict analytic tools. I want to use these words to give all the forms of oppression as they come through language, culture, high art, meaning, commands, descriptions, images, words. I want to give these forms of oppression back to the dominant ruling classes, whoever they are at this moment. The monstrosity or intention of these words is in the my words. He's talking about his own writing when he says these words. It is really rough. Is in this act of destruction. Therefore, I'm going to get rid of representation, stasis, which makes you think you know something. I want to exist in flux. Every image is a phantasm. The more obsessional and rigid you get, the nutsier you are. In my sense of translation, it's very weird. I want words to have no meaning. Writing is simply the working of language. I reverse what's given. He works with given text, too. I'll get to exactly how he does that in a second. Why do I reverse what's given? I like monotony because I'm not representing. Since I'm not representing, nothing's like anything else. There is flux. I don't represent flux. The words are just flux, fucking. He starts using a sexual image. Fucking doesn't end. So what he does, given this very general basic intention, is that he wants to get what he calls, he wants to get to what he calls a materialistic literature. And what he means by that, I mean, that's a funny word, right? He uses the word materialism because obviously, at least right here, I guess we all have a notion of what money is, you know, being the final object and the final fuck-up, or at least representative that there is this huge fuck-up and therefore the fucker-upper. Funky notion of language.
God.
Yeah. But, so, you know, I had to try to figure out what is this guy using this word materialism over and over again for? And what does he exactly mean by materialism? You know, and even more, you know, complexly, you know, we all have Hegel in the back of our minds or something about, you know, that the only real is the subjective, not the objective. So what someone suddenly, so very naive, is it naive to talk about, I see, because he wants to get to reality. I mean, the one search, of course, is for what's true, right? I mean, we've all got to, you know, we've got to get there somehow. I mean, this has to be a real gesture at some point. Yeah?
No.
No. Well, then it does, then that's true, too. I mean, give or take, you know, shit, man, there's this life. Life has, you know, there's something besides a... So, you're wondering, what does he mean by materialism? All right. Why would he... All right, let me get to what he says, get more specific now. I'm jumping around on a mass material here. Excuse it. They ask him... I'm going to go back a little and then get to it. They ask him at one point, the interviewer, how his writing organizes time. And what he gets into is a discussion of how he actually works. He says that what he first does is he writes down whatever he wants. And he calls this the savage text, or the text sauvage. And this is just, he regards this as the first and basic level of writing. It's just like, and it's absolutely the most simple gesture in the world. It's not a reflexive gesture. It's just that cry, that simple language's cry. And on top of that, then he starts doing his research. And he uses, at one point, I think he says he uses mainly Greek and Latin texts, the texts of De Sade, Bataille, if this interests any of you, De Sade, Bataille, I'll never say his name right, Klausowski, and scientific texts as material. He loves scientific texts, especially biological texts. He says at one point there was a text on the symptoms of TB, that was his favorite. And he uses these for notes, and he makes massive notes. And then he uses the two, and this is called the learned text. And he uses these two texts to change each other. And the way in which he uses these two, so when he talks about the time in his text, you know, they ask him, how do you organize time? He talks about using these two, what he calls, levels of writing. And the way in which these texts have to do with each other. Then they ask him, well, how do you deal with music? Let me get to where. Here. What text do you read? All right, that's the text. What's the text's relation to music? And this becomes very interesting, because this is how the two levels, the savage text and the learned text, relate to each other. He says, Tombeau, his first book, was a convulsive and lyric discovery of materialism. So this becomes his definition of materialism, which is why I wanted to get to it. The music touches the theme in two ways. One, I'm going to just tell you partly, because he talks as complicatedly as he writes. On one way, there's the voice level, and he says the Japanese, the African, the Arab, the South American jazz, the whole mass of the talent, Italian madrigals, Monteverdi. I calculated the timbre and the volume of the actual text, the writing, according to these musical models. The scene was quasi-musical, because the least organic noise is immediately modulated by the wind which passes. All the noise then is immediately deviated. This produced the tension of the text. Nothing happens in the text alone to the sonorous ground, on the sonorous ground, the phonetic level. Every single event, he means, is immediately modulated by another event. So you go back to the panorama, why he'd want to write using only a panorama, never using specific individuals, even though they're novels. Never using the usual novelistic specific action, except dum-dum-dum like bullet shots. It's because he's absolutely interested in this modulation. And that in the same way, the savage level and the learned level modulate each other. This is seems to be central to his concern, which is to arrive or discover to get to what he calls an organicism, the organic. And I think that's what really constitutes the shockingness and the revolutionariness of what he's doing, is that notion. See, Burroughs, I always took Burroughs to be one of the main prose writers who was really considering prose writing in a way that just wasn't about self-expression. I mean, of who's alive, of who's, you know, within immediate personal concerns. You know, someone you can touch in your own present living time, you know, my present living time, I mean. And here's a guy who's doing it in a different way, you know, because Burroughs always had this funny thing to me. It wasn't organic. You know, there was a funny, like, about Burroughs to me. There was something missing. And then suddenly, it's as if Burroughs and Gary Snyder fucked and way how do you write what you do, and you know, came up with this guy Guillotin. So in talking, he gets more specific. So his level of the intention comes down to, he wants everything to be organic. Or not wants, he wants to get at that organic, which is the ground, the final ground. I want to get, he gets very specific about this, which is what I want to get to. All right, he starts, what he then at some point talks about, they ask him, how do you write what you do? And he says, well, there are two things. And he starts talking about the body that writes and the body that propels, that moves. And he absolutely has no dualism between the writing and the living. He doesn't seem any difference between the text and his body. He says that, like, when he has a fever, the text, the whole modulation of the text changes. It's not only that one textual event modulates another textual event, or one on the phonetic level. He talks a lot about the phonetic level. One phonetic event will modulate another phonetic event. It's also when he has a fever, there's something the matter with his body. The whole text becomes modulated. The music becomes modulated. That's why music is so central to him, of course. There's the specific music, the actual events, the voices, and then there's the general framing music, which has to do with kinds of modulation. And he talks a lot about his bodily processes. And he also writes about bodily processes. You see, when he describes every kind of figure there could be in the Algerian landscape. And he's also describing every process there is in his body at the moment he's writing. And you have a feeling that there's this incredible lack of dualism that suddenly, and this, he's being absolutely, it's like the most amazing instance, well, for me now I'm fascinated, but all right, right this moment, a most amazing instance of someone being absolutely focused with thousands of little foci, you know, things there, and yet all over, you know, awareness of his own body, awareness of the text, awareness of the phonetic level, and yet this huge panorama, and there are no, like, distinctions. I mean, you have a world that's at once absolutely distinctionless, or non-dualistic, and absolutely focused, which is the closest approximation to when I did Zen training I've ever come to in for writing. You know, absolutely, you know, in terms of active being, you know, not just of someone saying, oh, I want to be a Zen master, or I'm being very simplistic now, but it just really, you know, the thing happening. I hope I'm being clear, at least why. All right, examples of this. More examples. Where do I want to get to now? Something when he talks about the sexual relation. All right, they say in France he has a real reputation. As I say, his books have been banned, and he has a real reputation of being a freak. And they asked him, you know, what do you think about that? Everyone thinks you're a freak. And he said, he's talking about he just takes the question. He never takes the question personally in that ego way. So he just talks about the notion of deviancy. And he says, all intervention tending to class you as a deviant, what do you do about it? And he says, all intervention Okay, all intervention tending to class you as a being among the deviants of a certain society, as being among the poet maudit, being to the contrary, to deny this judgment, that is another, the other opposite of the judgment, saying that you're healthy or normal. These, both of these kinds of statements are doubtful statements. To say he's not normal, or on the other hand, he's perfectly normal, is to exclude or reject precisely what you're doing, what you're introducing by means of the text. This which justly in the first case, that of deviant, allows the rejection of the... He's saying that what the word deviancy does is it throws the writer into a ghetto, and it makes, it will, it review, it removes his sources of income. And most of all, it considers him as someone who's only preoccupied with the me, with this very narrow ego, whereas the author, it makes for a wall, it makes for a definition, what Burroughs would call an image. It says, that has nothing to do with me, that person's only concerned about himself. That person, he goes on to say, it's the same thing as saying that person's possessed by genius. That person's other than me. I believe, and he goes on to say, I believe there's no normal corporality or abnormal. There's simply a limited corporality. In the same way, another time, they ask him to speak about sexuality in his novels, because his novels, they're a little like Genet in that way. And he says, you know, the notion of sexuality is a bourgeois notion. And it's based, again, on these distinctions, which are neurotic distinctions, that they're simply the world, and there's sexualness in the world, that the act of sexuality is not separated. For every act is sexual. It's not a separate... Eroticism is the word he uses, as opposed to sexuality. And he says eroticism is very bourgeois, that there's no such thing as eroticism, there's just sexuality, if that makes a distinction in English. And again, I go back that he's interested in this organic panorama. In the same way that he wants to get rid of eroticism, he says, my books are not erotic, I'm not interested in pornography, I'm not interested in shocking people, I'm not interested in upholding anything. I'm just interested in getting to the material level. I think now maybe we can begin to understand what he means by materialism. In the same way, I'm not interested in either ideals or in self-expression. Ideals are the same product as eroticism is. And he's absolutely anti-psychiatrist. I mean, he says very definitely he says, I want to get through neurosis. The one, you know, he says very definitely, talks about it very definitely. Let me find, in fact, find that passage. Let me go down here. Eroticism is only a deviation of the sexual act as practiced by the upper middle classes. Each body, except for the butcher, is driven only by the material movement or motoricity. Ideology alone produces neurosis or psychology. The relations among the crowd exchange themselves in an elementary, not a parodied economy. He's talking about why he uses a panorama. If he uses a lot of people, you get to this elementary exchange, rather than to a neurotic exchange. And in this way, there is the magnificent rehabilitation of the functions called low, and their emancipation by reinsertion in the sexual movement. That is, everything becoming again part of everything else as it is, means the breaking up of prison. That which destroys idealism deepens the materialist problem posed in the text. Then the sexual act disappears, or is lacking, under the mass of processes which the presence of organs engenders. I hope this is clear, or somewhat clear.
Evgeny speaks of an elementary organic gesture. The text is a motor. Everything in it is for a purpose. Words are written to be eaten. Words lead. Treaties up to exhaustion. The motoricity is polyvalent, generalized. And now he goes, becomes very precise. The syntactical and lexical formulations which fix a state of being or having, which assign a limit to these enumerations, which stretch to abstract or valorize a deed, to metaphorize it against nonspecificness, that is, which lead to nonspecificness, which would only be used to communicate sense or shit. Rather, active verbs, present participles, and the past perfects of these active verbs instead of adjectives, he's talking very precisely about how he writes and what he's using, adjectives and redoubling prefixes of those active verbs replace adverbs. He'll always go for the verb, and he'll always go to make, to use a kind of verbal adjective as much as he can. He gives examples then. No, as much as possible, only commas, so that you have no full stop and everything just goes into everything else. A monotony, just phrase, phrase, phrase. And often, if you notice, when I read you the first passage from Aidan, tenses will change in the middle of a sentence. You'll forget where you are. It won't be a cut up to syntax, but personal change. It's sort of this organic mess without mushing. The dash. Absolute, integral abolition of all psychological, humanistic, metaphysical terms in favor of the most scientific terms possible. Attention to the phonetic level, that level of materialism. Then they ask him, they ask him about the problem. I find this really interesting, of if a writer does what he wants to do and knows all that's going on in writing, it's the same thing. Don't you eventually, if you're doing experiments, get away from the mass of people? I mean, I think this is a real problem, you know, that poets in this country have, that on the one hand you find Rod McEwen and on the other hand you find Ron Silliman, if that makes any sense. You know, on the other hand, you on one hand, I'm talking about very extremes, you have people doing extreme experiments that very few people can really understand. And the other hand, you have, you know, such utter non-experimental work that it becomes... I'm making a false dualism now, but bear with me so you can see why this was interesting to me. And he says, and they ask him about this problem, and he says that he thinks it's indecent to pretend that anyone will be interested in his writing or should be. This is false. This idea that anyone would be interesting, or anyone should be interested in the writer's writing. And poise, you have to understand when I read this, the French preoccupation with the worker, you know, that notion of the worker. So let me read it as it is, and you can just make that little transfer. This is false and poisons the whole contemporary cultural process. And to demand of a searcher that for alleged reasons of social and immediate political efficacy, he abdicate his searcher role, and therefore that he reject the most recent acquisitions of literary language, is false. No, it's properly in pursuing his research that a writer can give to the working class, separated from the power of art, a better idea of what would be another kind of writing, to furnish the most scientific analysis, and he means, you know, to get it ground, to really comprehend the new. The call for obscurantism is reactionary, and on analytic scientific base, by reinsertion of this specific process into history, to have a language. True specificity, I'll never say that right, true specificity is true subjectivity conceived as an object like any other object, which I guess is finally what makes him a materialist. So granting this, what I found more and more, I mean, I'm still working on this, it's just the beginning, but it really, what's coming to be for me, you know, like why I'm interested in, is it's really becoming to be a rather precise mapping that I can work from of the imagination. I return to lore. in her way, to this passage, leaving memories, that whole baggage, there, the fallings apart and the constructed systems of life around it, death-born. Leaving this behind, please, the bronzes and the plasters of all civilizations and myself relying on a steely blue slate angle. I engaged, find a place one beautiful evening in the flying away of pigeons in the full heart of the city. The heavy birds, voyagers, crashed down. This was the retreat. This was the hour of meditation. I was 7 years old. I was on my knees, trembling before you, Virgin Mary, Mommy. My elbows and knees were broken. That is, I did my best to invent sins worse than anything I had actually done, so I'd be like what I should be, beating my breast, really repentant, knowing my cunt stunk. I invented. This is how poetry begins. It's the end of my lecture.
Come on.